Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Iris Bunshaft.
Hi, John.
And we're with Ann Margaret Carroza, who's an elder law attorney and author, very recently an author, which she's going to tell us about. And really just, she's a friend to the town. She's always here to help, which is the main thing. Her information is valuable.
How about invaluable?
Invaluable. That's what I was going for. And the point is, if you have questions, you do. You don't do these things on your own. Ann has a website. You can get some ideas. But this is the type of stuff I push all seniors. You have to have a legitimate consultation with an attorney because do it on your own, the results are going to be exactly what you're getting. You're not a trained professional. And then after you die, or unfortunately, if you become incapacitated, the mess that starts within the family because this wasn't done right.
It ain't pretty.
No, it ain't. And another thing is that I'd like to talk on is wills and assets, which is important, too. I mean, some of these people have things scribbled on napkins, and the percentage of people that don't have stuff done. I don't know if it's a statistic. You probably got a better feel. I'm told that 30% of people over 70 have nothing done.
Yeah, I've heard it's actually a little bit more than that. And there are a lot of reasons for it. I think some people are superstitious. You know, going back 20 years ago when I was first doing this, I raised the subject with my grandmother. And I think she thought I was wishing her dead. And she cursed at me for the first and only time that she did that. And she, it was her prerogative, and I respected that. She died without a will. And this is a true story. My mother and her brother killed themselves in surrogate's court over what was a very modest estate. And I kind of cringed with embarrassment with my colleagues thinking that Ann Margaret Carroza couldn't even do a will for her grandmother. But the truth is she didn't want to do it. So that's a factor out there. I think, though, as people are becoming more and more educated, we're seeing less of that.
Yes, I just think some of the holdback is on the cost of it, basically.
I think so. And you know what? A lot of it you can do on your own. We talked in the last segment about the healthcare proxy, the living will. I think people can and should do that on their own. The will, it's a funny thing. You can do a will on your own, but your family will be paying for that later on. You can technically write a will on a bounty paper towel, and it will be validated by the court, but your family is going to be in court with it for 2 years.
For probating your
right.
Yes, exactly. Now, taking myself as an example, I've been doing this for 20 years. I can literally write a will in my sleep. I did not write my own will because I will not be around when it needs to be administered. So you want to outsource the function of doing a will. Very important.
I'm sorry, I missed the point you're making there.
Yeah, so we should not do our own wills because New York State has a provision in law, the Estates, Powers, and Trusts Law, which says a will done under the supervision of an attorney is quote-unquote presumed valid. That means it is on roller skates through the probate process, and my family will be in and out of probate in a matter of weeks, as opposed to months or years if it's a do-it-yourself will.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I think most people don't understand that.
Right.
Most of the stuff involved, people don't understand. And I've gone to some of Van's seminars, and it's crowded, and people start asking questions. It's very important. I have another question. Most seniors, their biggest asset is their house.
Yes.
Will a revocable trust protect that?
Well, a revocable or living trust is very appealing psychologically, right? There are a lot of seminars out there.
Florida is full of them. Every other day there's...
Exactly, you know, right. Whenever anyone goes to Florida, they come back with a revocable trust. There are seminars. My mother and her friends go to them for the free refreshments, but I caution her not to come back with a revocable living trust. The psychological appeal is that I can be my own trustee. I can put the assets in. I can take the assets back out. I'm not beholden to anyone. Nothing has changed. But think about that logically. If I can get my hot little hands on those assets whenever I want, then so can a nursing home. So it doesn't matter if I did the revocable trust 5, 6, or 7 years ago. If I need nursing home care today, they will say to me, go revoke your trust because you're able to, pay for your own care, and when you're down to exhaust fumes, then we can discuss putting you on the Medicaid program. So the revocable living trust does nothing to protect assets vis-a-vis long-term care.
So you're saying that you do more irrevocable trusts today?
Well, irrevocable, that word is a turnoff to all of us when we hear it. And the truth is, if our goal is asset protection vis-a-vis long-term care needs, the trust must be technically irrevocable, but it does not have to be totally irrevocable.
Excuse me, may I stop you right there? Is there a change in what you're saying, or has this always been the case?
This has always been the case,
okay. Yes.
So in order to, quote unquote, get my 5-year clock ticking, we need to create an entity that is a little bit irrevocable. So I will need to name another person as the trustee. I cannot be my own trustee. But the control that we can retain is that we should provide within the trust that the grantor, again, that's the person setting it up, the grantor should retain the ability to remove and replace the trustee. So, Iris, I may initially appoint you as the trustee. You could move away or we could have a falling out. If I retained the ability to pull you out of there, then there's no problem.
So there is some wiggle room so people don't have to feel that it's cemented
Absolutely.
In place.
Absolutely. There should be a lot of wiggle room built into this. We want to provide that the parent, the person setting it up, has 100% of the ownership rights during their lives. And by providing that, we get the added benefit of keeping the star property tax exemption in place, which incidentally was my law way back in the year 1998 when I was an assemblywoman, that when we set up a trust, if the parent retains the lifetime ownership rights, then we get to keep the star tax exemptions.
You know, what's being said here is just further confirmation that this is not do it on your own stuff.
Yes.
You know, you shouldn't be changing the electric in the house just because you read a manual. You shouldn't be doing wills and healthcare proxies, et cetera, without having a consult. That's my opinion, because all these little caveats and a change here and a left there, you don't want to turn around when the situation occurs.
You don't even know about
And
them.
Then it's like, oh, it's too bad we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue, we don't have that much time, another issue that I find with Project Independence, which is growing, is seniors having to deal with adult children with special needs. Is there a way of protecting some sort of a distribution that's going to go to them on the death of the senior so that they won't lose all the benefits that they get?
Absolutely. And, you know, a broader application of that is all of us have beneficiaries with little problems. That may be a substance abuse issue, a mental health issue, a developmental disability. My daughter could be on her fourth marriage. She could spend money like a drunken sailor. You know, all of these things should cause us to customize the distribution. I think it's archaic and antiquated to simply say everything goes equally to Mary, Susie, Johnny. What are the chances that they are all equally able to manage and hold money? As it relates to someone with a special needs, a developmental disability, we would want to create a special needs trust for them. So a third to Mary, a third to Susie, and a third to Johnny in the form of a special needs trust that would enable him to enjoy the assets without it disrupting any means-tested government programs to which he would otherwise be entitled.
Okay. And I'm attesting to that because maybe 5 or 6 years ago, Peter and I got an account from a client. And it was a granddaughter.
Peter's your partner.
Peter's my partner. Got an account from a client. And it was a decent amount of money. And she came in with her mother, opened it up, and within a month, the money was gone because it was a special needs girl, and they never should have left it to her. Mm-mm. And then the state came in. It was a big disaster. I really don't know what happened to it after that. All I know was, like, it had to be stopped. And they went after her, said, now you have money so you can pay back all the years of you know, free stuff you've been getting from the state. And that happens with car accidents, et cetera. I mean, the state wants to get paid back. But that's amazing. And if we have time, which only a minute, spousal refusal.
Yeah, it's still alive and well.
It is. Okay,
in New York State.
Okay. In Nassau?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. Yeah, spousal refusal, though, doesn't mean that we get a free ride. It simply means that if I refuse to contribute my assets toward the cost of my husband's care, they can't delay or deny his Medicaid application. However, they can and will come after me. So they become my new pen pal, and they send me a lot of requests for payment, and that will often go to a fair hearing where we negotiate it.
That's the point. You can negotiate versus paying the top dollar of the nursing
home. Exactly.
You'll get a deal at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Okay, perfect.
If we have one more minute, I'd
absolutely
like to backtrack just a moment. For those people who are living on fixed incomes, in a long-term care policy would be very expensive for them. So what options are left for those people who have some assets but not a great amount of assets?
Well, I think that we can look at a number of different ways to finance the purchase of long-term care insurance. Let's say we have someone with a big, beautiful home, and they don't really have many other assets. They need to provide insurance for their future to cover long-term care expenses, even if it means getting a reverse mortgage to pay for the long-term care insurance. That would be one viable option.
You know what? We're out of time, but one thing, going to Iris's question, there are options, but they're very individualized.
Yes.
And they're very detailed. So it really is not even an over-the-air type of thing, because you'll send somebody in the wrong direction. It's a matter of calling Ann at 516-741-7870 and starting the conversation. Ann, thank you for taking the time. It's always so beneficial to have
you
on
so
for
our
listeners. We'll be right back. You've been listening to 88.1 FM, WCWP.org.